In this aircraft control, the command module in the helmet will be directly tied into the guidance system. The third computer brain system in an anti-missile missile may be thousands of miles away. This confronts us with a most difficult problem, whereby the command, low long way, low intensity wave, must be transmitted a long distance to the anti-missile missile or to a satellite, then to the missile. We could transmit sound with an electric current and through a fiber optic, why not brainwave? In 1960-61 we started laser experiments with this in mind, since EBS had such a base. They also had a headband which could intensify brainwaves, possibly for mental telepathy. Experiments in Europe show that the brain frequency can be intensified from an outside source and then passed through the brain to an organ out of resonance. The intensifier would sweep through a range of frequencies and the receiving brain mechanism would only accept the proper frequency that matched that of the organ it controlled. A constant sweep back and forth of the proper wavelength would bring the organ back to normal vibration. Another theory, of the vague study of the Roswell brain, suggested that thought, a brain function, could be aimed at a specific target anywhere on Earth and bring about a desired effect. However, this theory delves into another dimension. Part of this discussion would be similar to instinct, which is claimed to be a brain function or the build-up or sharpening process of the not-too-clear approach of layers of another dimension. To remain within our state of the art, we should attack the problem by intensifying the brain wave and projecting the energy to the missile's third brain. By radar, laser, radio waves or other electronic means, this would allow instantaneous response to changes in trajectory or angle of attack of the intercept missile. In conclusion, a control exercised by the human brain on an electromechanical device. Transmitting of radio waves or radar to control a distant object is within our state of the art. In 1947, during my visit to the Italian Naval Academy, I was shown that all clocks in the academy were controlled by one radio beam. Radio control of aircraft and even model aircraft is a simple fact. The Nike missiles were under control until the moment of detonation. But the superimposing of a brainwave is a factor beyond the state of the art. Perhaps such a development could lead us into another dimension and even overcome gravity. Einstein, in his theory of relativity, found in his geometric theory that space-time tells mass how to move / and mass tells space-time how to curve. Perhaps a brain or thought wave integrated in an electromagnetic wave could overcome gravity and eliminate the space-time curve and travel straight to the missile. Science says mass against mass creates gravity. Could the insertion of a thought wave move into the fourth dimension and create an artificial gravity so that man could travel in space? A gravity magnetic field controlled by man himself, mass against zero. My analysis of the Roswell mystery leads me to believe that the above is a reality. Note, for General Trudeau, at your discretion, you should destroy the above. The data comes to me as I write, just as all my plans in Rome. I can add nothing further. This is only guidance for others to continue or discard. R&D advances derived from a study of missions. Periodically, I would sit in my office, close the door and pick out an important project, and pile all information on my desk. Then I would begin a systematic evaluation. Was I correct in my conclusions? Had I missed anything? Was my approach accurate, consistent and realistic? I had learned through this process that often I found glaring omissions, which just were not there. The so often were as important as the factual data. Often I had to enter a part of my equation, like a mathematical problem, to arrive at an answer to justify continuation of the project. On this particular day I assemble all the information from my UFO file, I found some perplexing and important omissions, or lack of information on the Roswell crashed saucer. 1. No mention of subsistence or nourishment to sustain a biological entity. No mention of any foodstuff or necessities of life. Comment Rune. Not so strange, because according to information from the Aerogroup, the people in the Roswell UFO, was biological robots. http://galactic.no/rune/billyroswell.htm. 2. No mention of water or drinking or cleansing of the body. 3. No mention of refrigeration equipment. 4. No mention of medical facilities except for a type of first aid kit. 5. No availability of toilet or waste disposal facilities. 6. No rest or recreational facilities. I would have to begin with certain assumptions or conjectures and then come up with some conclusion, and a course of action. From data available, we could assume that the UFOs were reconnaissance craft and could quickly return to a mothership to receive the necessities of life. The other was that they had solved gravity time dimensional travel and could instantaneously return to their base. However, if I advanced these theories, I could be placed in the category of a science fiction writer. I ruled these assumptions out, for the present. I thought back a few years, to what I had been taught in Italy, by some of the world's most famous doctors, the basis of life. The answer must be in the nuclear area and types of electromagnetic energy. In 1957, just before I took command of the Army's missile firing range at Red Canyon, New Mexico and later the 71st Missile Battalion in Germany, I had extensive courses in nuclear weapons and radiation. I had learned not only the destructive qualities, but the beneficial action of radiation. The Army had been in charge of Los Alamos and perfection of the atom bomb. We also had built smaller nuclear power plants which could be transported on barges. This led to a reactor weighing 6 tons, is self-operating, requires no attending, will produce electricity for 20 years and is safe. Nuclear propulsion for ships and submarines is well known. We had built an atom bomb the size of a football and a 280mm artillery shell. Radioisotopes have powered dozens of space missions. Plutonium-230 was used in the interplanetary spacecraft to Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune and Uranus. There have been no failures. They will function for 20 years without refueling. They function unattended, are safe, and the isotopes come from nuclear waste. We knew the answers were in the nuclear field, but here we were against one giant obstacle which could stop everything we were doing. This obstacle was man's stupidity. The environmentalists' warped concept or radiation we had to watch closely. A good example is DDT. It was a remarkable pesticide yet ended in tragedy. During we carried a small ad color can of DDT. Often I sprinkled down my chest and back and then loosen my belt to let it fall lower. No allied soldier was stricken with typhus which had in the past decimated armies. This marvelous pesticide which almost eradicated malaria was stopped by stupidity. Millions of deaths can be attributed to this gross stupid act. Bird population to which it was supposed to be harmful has actually increased where it was used. Lead time upon a development, that is from the time it was conceived, until it was in the hands of troops, was 8 to 12 years. In special cases we were able to reduce it to 5-6 years. But this was an exception to the rule. Some of the Roswell developments were beginning to show promise in 1959-1960. We were able to add an impetus to certain projects. This was especially in the nuclear area. We had begun important projects of irradiation of food projects, meat, fruit, vegetables, grains, etc. This was most important for the world and for our astronauts. Presently our astronauts eat irradiated foods. Also on our agenda was nuclear medicine, nuclear disposal of waste and pollution and the far-fetched, nuclear renourishment and rebuilding of bacteriological functions. I laid my thinking or findings before the general. I said if my evaluation is true, we are dealing with intellect sending these expendable creatures to Earth. We must proceed to send our humans into space, to challenge them. Therefore, food and water irradiation is most important. This also would eliminate the cumbersome, inefficient system of refrigeration. At this moment the general stopped me and made a phone call. He said, "Go get your hat, we have been invited to lunch, Our helicopter picked us up at the Pentagon and we flew to the Quartermaster Center. When we arrived, we were met in style and escorted to the laboratory. We were shown a huge room full of shelves in which were all types of meat, fruit and vegetables. The pork was free of trichina worm, chickens and eggs were free of bacterium salmonella, and so was seafood, fungus spores, insects and their eggs were gone. Fruits and vegetables were tree or vine ripe and free of rot. Even milk was not sour, although every item in the room had been in an open shelf at room temperature for over 2 years. In these few years, a great step forward had been accomplished to replace refrigeration, freezing, canning, frying, salting or smoking. The commanding general took us to an open shelf and said, "Gentlemen, pick your lunch, steak, beans, potatoes, strawberries, all fresh, delicious and palatable, and harmless." The year was 1961, the lunch was delicious, the steak tender, juicy and tasty. Despite Nader's misgivings after 32 years, I am still healthy and alive. At the lunch, General Trudeau said, "Gentlemen, my assistant believes your work is of utmost importance to the US Army, our nation and the world, and will contribute to our travel in space. I am of the same opinion. In the next 2 weeks, submit to me a supplement budget to expand your operation, and I want it also included into next year's budget." This series of events with the US Army Quartermaster gave a decided impetus to 1, 2, and 3 of my omission findings. Developments were in good hands and well on their way. The next two, nuclear medicine and waste disposal, were another matter. These were vast and specialized fields in many areas beyond my competency. OCRD had over 3,000 officers with a degree as a prerequisite. My duties for such as testifying before Congress, budget, policies etc. took much of my time. However, competent men were chosen and the projects moved forward. I kept a watch and followed most projects with great interest. One area began to show great immediate promise, the other end of the nutrition scale, human excrement of sewage. In Asian countries, sewage has and is being used as fertilizer and soil conditioner. In Japan and Korea, I have seen giant carrots, onions, turnips, etc. 2 or 3 feet long and 5 inches to 6 inches across. In Korea, giant garlic is used to make their national food kimchi. However, in this country, such a use is out of the question. Public opposition and possible disease-causing organism rule out its use. Cesium-137 solved the problem. Packaged in an irradiation, sludges run through their radiator. The product becomes sterile, harmless and an additive fodder. Another byproduct became apparent and of importance to the military. Electronic lights of krypton 85 or tritium glow with the yellow-green radio luminescence, endure a wide range of temperature, cannot cause fires, are visible for miles and last close to 20 years. Possibility light found in ancient caves or inside UFO crafts. Example, no remark. The most startling developments began to appear in the area of nuclear medicine, specifically in the knowledge of medical diagnosis and therapy. Detailed pictures of any part of the human body could be obtained. X-rays known for many years originate outside of the body. Nuclear scanning techniques use radioactive materials inside, through the circulatory system. Nuclear magnetic resonance imaging builds up a three-dimensional image. Here again, man's stupidity or lack of knowledge had to be considered. The word nuclear was dropped, as stated by the medical profession, not to offend the sensitivity of emotional patients. A courteous or nice way to cover up the real description, the stupid patient. Many of the R&D officers were extremely intelligent men and the projects were moving at a good pace. It was discovered that many of the elements did not occur in nature but created in a nuclear reactor. Technetium-99 for brain scans, lungs and liver. For soft tumors. For the heart. Cancer and sterilization. For lodges in bone marrow. Liver. Prostate. Gallium-67, thallium-201, cobalt-60. Phosphorus-32. Yttrium-90. palladium 103. There were many other elements in nuclear medicine and they are too numerous to mention here. Number 6, on my list, lack of rest and recreation facilities, was not a difficult problem. Nuclear power solved the problem of heat and air conditioning. The rest was left to the astronaut or space traveler himself and to psychological experts. Although we were delving onto the basic structure of matter and the atomic molecular structure of the human anatomy, one basic question remained. If the extraterrestrials were clones, how did they reconstitutory structure themselves? Were they expendable and only used to perform a mission and then replaced? The former question seems to be more logical and better fitted our thinking and our approach. They were delicate creatures and faded quickly, but still they were humanoids. I remember the chemistry classes of my younger days, when chemical reactions were described in plus or minus, or electrical patterns. I had many conferences with project officers and the German scientists. We invariably agreed the cells and even organs could be replaced by cloning and sustained by electromagnetic means, applied to the basic structure. Research took me to medical libraries, but I did not learn much more. General Trudeau retired. Then in April 1963, Lieutenant General Dwight Beach awarded me my 5th Army Commendation Medal and I left the search to others. Every so often I would return for a visit and was always well received with dignity and respect. Probe and challenge. The Apollo moon program came to my abrupt halt with Apollo 17, in 1972. No clear explanation was given and the US continued with manned Earth orbits only, by the shuttle program. Even the Russians curtailed and halted their moon-Mars program. During the Geneva Summit Conference in November, 1985, President Reagan made this point to Soviet Chairman Mikhail Gorbachev. He said, "How much easier his task and mine might be in these meetings that we held. If suddenly there was a threat to this world from another species, from another planet outside the universe, we would forget all the little local differences that we have between our countries, and we would find out once and for all that we really are all human beings here on the Earth together." In view of this, were we threatened by superior beings with super technology? Were we scared off and did we decide not to fight and sit and hope for the best? We never had this view in the military and as far back as 1960 were preparing, just in case. However, diplomats and civilian officials were often not of this opinion. During the Geneva Conference in the 1950s, a naval commander, in charge of the U.S. dispensary at Geneva, came to us at the NSC and said in disgust, "Every time Molotov pounded the table, my dispensary was crowded with our negotiators seeking tranquilizers." During the Korean War, I was on General Douglas MacArthur's staff. He was a brilliant individual and did not scare before the enemy. His decisions and directives were clear, precise and well thought out. In 1955 he made an astonishing statement, "The nations of the world will have to unite, for the next war will be an interplanetary war. The nations of the Earth must someday make a common front against attack by people from other planets." UFOs produce high-tension electric charges and strong magnetic fields. Strong electrical and magnetic effects. The electrical systems on our spacecraft, often with serious and devastating results. Therefore, we must produce radiation or EMI-hardened sensors, integrated circuits and other electrical equipment which cannot be harmed or distorted by electromagnetic forces. We will then be able to compete against their artificial fields of gravity. Until such a time we might be compelled to play a waiting game. This is what we meant when we surmised we will continue to develop aerospace craft and weapons. Just in case. It appears that NASA and the politicians backed off. With a wait-and-watch attitude, the space station was billed as the next logical step in the exploration and journeys to the Moon and Mars. NASA's Office of Exploration has been abolished. For the last 15 years the exploration, the organization planning human missions to the Moon and Mars, has been a small study office in the Office of Space Science. One glimmer of positive thinking remains and may rise in importance of our enemy attacks in the biological area. Biomedical research to help understand the role of gravity on living systems is continuing. Importance is being attached to maintaining astronauts' health and productivity, understanding biological responses to weightlessness and develop systems for long-term human spaceflight. The microgravity research program is being funded. This is a good sign. All the biomedical, microgravity and long-term support systems will be most important if we have to fight in space or on the moon. Congress wants to know what the new NASA will do with the space station. They should be told that we might have to fight in space and not just spend the money to support 17,000 prime contractors, thousands of subcontractors and 2,300 government employees. NASA should stop the impression of having no strategy and stop irregular and disconnected strategic planning and publicize advanced concepts and technology just as the tremendous push NASA gave the computer ship and software section. Above all, they should reveal the truth of their findings on Moon and Mars gravity and other objects, UFOs construction, atmosphere, etc., found and seen on the Moon and Mars. There is ample evidence of alien activity on the Moon. 122 photographs from NASA's Science Data Center were examined and analyzed by photographic experts with startling findings. The authors of Alien Activity of the Moon, and Fred Steckling, himself, was a trained observer in astronomical studies. Moongate, the NASA military cover-up book, contains 20 color photographs of US astronauts on the Moon. This book of Fred Steckling, in German, online link active summer 2019. Various treaties demilitarizing the Moon, have been signed by the US, USSR and other countries of this world. But I wonder if the aliens recognize these treaties. They have violated our airspace with impunity and even landed on our territory. Whether intentional or not, they have performed hostile acts. Our citizens have been abducted and killed. Well, this is also karma for all the exploitation of your lands, which the people of Earth, and especially the USA has been doing for decades. Rorem. Book. They have endangered our space vehicles and the occupants, scouted our sensitive bases and probed at will. They have mutilated animals on our territory and removed organs, possibly for study, for ulterior motives. The above are acts of war which we would not tolerate from any worldly source. It also appears they do not tolerate any such acts on our part on their bases. This is just according to the secret agreement with the Greys, and such. Just natural, as they signed treaties, secret with the US military on this. Roe remark, see link. We in the military, long ago concluded they have voluntarily given us nothing. Well, see comment on this, just above, and he seemed to have no information on this. Roe remark, what we gained from their presence we obtained by accident and moved forward enough to challenge them with their own technology. The question is, will we continue to watch and wait until it is too late? Will we probe and challenge and upset their timing? Or will they force our hand? The US military has long known, 1959, of the special needs for man's mastery of space. 1. Means of inducing hibernative slowing down of body processes without injury to the individual for long space voyages. 2. Means of raising human alertness to the highest levels without impairing physical reactions. 3. Means of protecting human tissue, especially brain and eye, against nuclear cosmic or magnetic radiation. We not only have to harden electrical circuitry on our hardware, but have to harden tissue against the electromagnetic forces. Such research was started in 1958, by subordinate units to US Army Research and Development. The Soviet U.S. Corporation in the late 1980s showed evidence that there was threat from another planet. On September 21, 1987, President Reagan again said, "I occasionally think how quickly our differences would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world." On May 1988, Reagan added, "What would happen if all of us in the world discovered we were threatened by an outer, a power from outer space, from another planet?" In a February 1987 address, Gorbachev chose not to dispute such a threat on an invasion by extraterrestrials. On Sept.5 his foreign minister said, yes, absolutely, that they would join the US against an alien threat from outer space. Within days of Phobos 2 incident, unexpected steps reversed a DoD decision to build two X-39 hypersonic planes, which would be self-launching spaceships for military space defense. The US and USSR are aligning their space program against a common enemy. Fortunately, we enter the 1990s with a better understanding of the biological processes of cell replication, the function and code of genes and many inherited defects and illnesses we still don't know enough, but enough to be able to evaluate many maladies and diagnose their causes and effects. Wishful thinkers comment that extraterrestrials may be benevolent. However, there is no evidence of such benevolency. Comment, a lot evidence exists on this, examples, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, plus we always kept in mind that the extraterrestrials never gave us a thing. Not one scientific development or lead ever came voluntarily from them. What we did pick up was pure accident. It appears that there may have been a directive from possibly their higher-ups, not to pass any technology to us, which was indeed a fact. We were fortunate that 1958 to 1963 was a transit era of awakening. The leadership and talent at US and Germany was available to take advantage of what little we found to proceed into a new scientific age. We didn't expect any more than we garnered by accident, because to whom could they give or entrust such advancements? To civilizations which had killed millions of its people in divesting wars and had just perfected weapons of mass destruction. Who among the world's people could be trusted? We didn't know of any, not even us. We would put it to military use. Get large industry aerospace to build it. Here it would stop and possibly never be utilized in the civilian market / or delay for years. In 1963, Senator Strom Thurmond accompanied me to a meeting with head of NASA on this subject, which they called their Tech Brief Program. Although many hostile acts by extraterrestrials could be considered accidental, some were regarded as suspicious, such as, 1. Von Braun's reference to the deflection from orbit of the US Juno 2 rocket in late 1950s. Dr. Robert Sarbaker, Research and Development Board under Dr. Compton during Eisenhower administration. The only thing I remember at this time is that certain materials reported to have come from flying saucer crashes were extremely light and very tough. I am sure our laboratories analyzed them very carefully. 1952-54. Dr. W. B. Smith. We believe that we are on the track of something which may well prove to be the introduction to a new technology. The existence of a different technology is borne out by the investigations which are being carried on at the present time in relation to flying saucers. The 10th of August 1953, Dr. Wilbert Smith. It appears then, that we are faced with a substantial probability of the real existence of extraterrestrial vehicles, regardless of whether they fit into the scheme of things. Such vehicles of necessity must use a technology considerably in advance of what we have. It is therefore submitted that the next step in this investigation should be a substantial effort toward the acquisition of as much as possible of this technology, which would without doubt be of great value to us. 1959, Dr. Wernher von Braun. If the military has now acquired new technology as a result of top-secret research in UFOs and I am inclined to support this hypothesis, we are now engaged in entering in closer. We find ourselves faced by powers which are far stronger than we had hitherto assumed. In 1959 Dr. Wernher von Braun, another great space pioneer, made an intriguing statement, reported in Germany, referring to the deflection from orbit of the US Juno 2 rocket, he stated, "We find ourselves faced by powers which are far stronger than we had hitherto assumed, and whose base is at present unknown to us. More, I cannot say at present. We are now engaged in entering into closer contact with those powers and in 6 or 9 months' time it may be possible to speak with more precision on the matter." Europa, the 1st of January 1959. It is impossible to confirm them in the present as it will be to deny them in the future. Albert M. Chopp, Deputy Public Relations Director NASA. We are being watched by beings from outer space. US Gemini, Apollo problems, Gemini 7, Gemini 9, 1966. Apollo 1, 1967. Apollo 8,